Hi, I'm Janelle McDermott.
Hi, this is Larry Owens.
Hi, I'm Jasmine Cephas Jones.
Hi, I'm Zaniba Now. You're listening to the Call and Response Podcast. It's lit. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Call and Response Podcast with Felicia Fitzpatrick. And the other day, the cast of The Play That Goes Wrong came into the office for Playbill, the game show, which I get to host for work. And I had seen the show on Broadway, and I definitely thought it was funny, but these actors, like, I guess I'd forgotten how hilarious they are. They even pulled a prank on me during the filming, but they were also delightful off camera. We had such a blast. In their show, they're able to seamlessly blend together physical comedy with situational comedy and all of these other comedy theory ideologies that I don't know the name of, but I do know they crack me up. And funnily enough, it's like Gold Star knew this because I was scrolling through my recommended shows and The Play That Goes Wrong was on there. And as y'all know, that's just the beginning with Gold Star. They provide affordable tickets to theater, comedy shows, concerts, and so much more. So download Gold Star and let's make some memories, y'all. Every week, I'm like, I'm hype, I'm thrilled, I'm excited. And then every week I talk about how I know I always say that. But guess what? It's true. I'm so hype. I'm so thrilled. I'm so excited to introduce this week's guest. We met at Bar's workshop and then we just saw each other at random events and continued to be like, hey, and then we got coffee and that's where it really solidified because we love like a biracial, bisexual babe. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, please welcome Zaniba Now, a recently retired musical storyteller. Hi.
Hi.
Talk to me about recently retired.
Recently retired. So I just had a show, a solo show, my first and last solo show.
Dang,
actually.
It goes by so quick.
I know. That's how life is, right? called I Quit, in which I retired from the theater industry. So hence recently retired.
What prompted it?
Oh, there's actually a whole hour and a half show that explains what prompted it.
Tune in for next week's episode where we just play the entire show. Yes. Okay. But I'm still banking on that, like, you can always unretire.
Sure.
Come back. Mr. Feeney did in Boy Meets World, right?
People keep coming out of retirement.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Elton John's done it a few times.
Shout out to Sir Elton John, if you're listening. Oh. You probably are. He listens to this every week. Anyway, okay, so you recently retired, but let's go back to the beginning. A very good place to start. I kind of messed it up. Anyway, how did you get involved in performing arts?
I feel like I was super blessed to go to good schools growing up, and so we had performing arts in them. I just was asked this question by the Dramatist Guild Foundation, and I said preschool.
Really?
Yeah, we did like a musical version of The First Thanksgiving.
Love it.
And I was in it.
Yeah,
it was
mandatory. Yeah, you were.
Yeah. And performed pretty much always and played sports also. Was very well-rounded.
Oh, yeah.
Into many, many things.
And you grew up in California.
Yeah, I grew up in Los Angeles. All around Los Angeles.
I don't know the LA theater scene very well. Like, I know there is one, but were you, like, going to concerts and what have you around LA, or was it mostly in your school?
No, definitely. It was all just school stuff. I was really into movie musicals. So, like, I would rent, like, Willy Wonka and Cinderella, Rodgers and Hammerstein with Brandy and Whitney.
Obviously.
From the library.
A classic.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That was my, you know, theater life. My father was in the film industry, and my parents were very strict that I not be involved professionally as a child. So, yeah, I just had a very, you know. And then I came to the East Coast, and that's when I started pursuing it professionally. But I wasn't sure, like, my whole life that I was going to do this.
Yeah.
I wanted to go into politics.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I think it definitely takes a certain, like, performance quality and, like, charisma that you also have to to do performing arts to be a politician, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, hello. But what about politics interested you?
I really don't know. I think I was just really, you know, passionate about things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't even imagine what it's like for people in high school now with those emotions reading these kinds of headlines. But, like, I feel like Iraq was, like, really something that, like, had me really upset. And I just wanted to, do my part. I was also very, very patriotic at the time, and I thought that, you know, I had a duty to sort of serve the country.
Interesting.
Yeah.
The patriotism. At a young time.
Yeah.
At a young part of your life. Well, then, so, okay. So then when did you move to the East Coast?
When I was 17, I went to the Boston Conservatory.
Oh, BoCo.
BoCo. Mm-hmm. I got a degree in musical theater performance with an emphasis in directing.
So in going to Boston Conservatory, like, you were committing moving across the country. So there was a moment where you're like, okay, I think performing arts is the thing
for me.
Oh,
that was the commitment to the arts career, okay, for sure. Like, I had been meeting with a recruiter because I wanted to join the military. And
so that was like real.
Yeah. Like, and I, wow, you know, I had a few like mentors in my life who were veterans. And so I wanted to, you know, enlist, do ROTC, and then like come back and do poli-sci and a law degree.
Wow.
And basically my mom was just like, I will pay for the auditions to any of these things. Please just do it.
Wow.
And so I applied to 3 schools and I got into BoCo. And I was like, well, I guess this is the kind of thing you don't turn down.
Yeah.
And so I just went with it. And here I am 10 years later.
You are retired from the showbiz.
Retired now. I had a lengthy decade of a career and...
Right. It was like filled to the brim. So you had to salute. But I'm interested in like the flip of your mom. Like, did your dad flip as well of like, okay, like do performing arts now that you're older?
No. So my father was out of the picture starting like in middle school.
Got it.
And so there never really was that like, you know, sort of conversation there around any of that. I think that they just were hyper aware of the amount of partying going on in Hollywood, and I think also potentially other sinister aspects to the studios.
Yeah.
And they just didn't want that for me.
I mean, that makes sense, because I feel like child stars, I feel like they even have like, not that they have a reputation, but like what the industry does to them has a reputation, you know?
Yeah.
Wow. So then what was the transition like to the East Coast? Like, did you feel a culture shock in that way?
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Without a doubt.
Well, what was that first year like?
I think it was East Coast, but I've moved around a lot in my life. So I've lived in a lot of different communities where I've been various level of minority among the communities.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing that was so shocking to me was... I feel like on the East Coast, race is more, directly referenced.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like on the East Coast, and, you know, maybe this is just my experience and a generalization, but my guess is that on the East Coast, like, people are like, oh, did you just see my friend come in here? He's Chinese. He's this tall. Whereas I feel like on the West Coast, you're like, did you see my friend come in here? He has a blue shirt.
Interesting.
And you will never describe their race, even when it would be so helpful.
Right.
So, like, people are like, the funny black girl. And I was just, like, looking, like, where? Who is she? You know, and then I was like, oh my God, they're talking about me. Am I supposed to feel some sort of way about this?
Yeah.
You know, not that it's an insult, but it was just, you know, as the only black woman in the class, I was like, oh, it's me they're talking about.
You were the only black girl?
Yes. Yeah.
In your class? What was, and even conservatory life, like, were you guys, did they set shows like, okay, we're going to do The Drowsy Chaperone this fall, or was it more like you guys did showcase review type things? I don't know what conservatories are like.
Well, we do full production, like a season. Yeah, okay. You know, like the main stage season, which is like, I want to say 2 plays and 2 musicals and a concert musical.
So were they always, quote, like white shows that you guys did?
I mean, absolutely. There's not enough black people to do a black show.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Did that take a toll on you, though? Because not that you have to be, like, doing a Raise in the Sun every year, but, like, you know.
I think there was an unintentional disservice done in my education in that this industry is so segregated as an actress. It's so segregated, you know, the auditions are by race and gender.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who you audition with. Which is also hard to be put in a space, I think, to finally be put in an all Black femme space and then be in competition. Mm-hmm. And not that I've ever experienced really any sort of nastiness there. I think what goes on with the white women calls, I tend to hear much more savage, competitive things. But I find that at the, you know, the few calls that I survived at before some of my earlier retirements.
So there's been multiple.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's important to keep retiring and quitting and letting go of anything that's just bullshit, you know.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. So you're retiring from the bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
I gotcha. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really what my whole life is about.
I love it.
But, yeah, and I feel like, you know, to be trained in a certain way and in a certain style and then to be professionally asked to do a whole completely different style, you know? So it's not like all the other students need to focus on Motown and R&B and all this stuff, but that's what I need to focus on. And then, you know, like this whole, like, you know, Rebecca Naomi Jones in Oklahoma, like that's like, you know, or like an Audra McDonald situation, that's like a more rare sort of, you know, situation. Or newer occurrence, you know?
Yeah.
But so, yeah, it was like, you know, definitely a wide learning gap.
Right. I feel like. Mm-hmm. And then so when you were in those audition spaces, like, I mean, we hear stories from a lot of different people, but I'm curious of your experience too. Like, were you ever asked to sound like more Black, quote, quote, or also because like you're biracial, I'm curious too, of like, if they were like, what are you or something like that, you know?
I feel like I've definitely experienced a gamut of,
bullshit.
I mean, just ask actors if they can name you Black casting directors and that will explain to you the problem.
Ooh.
Damn.
Yeah.
Right there. So yeah, if somebody's out here and interested in this, find a way to create more equity there because they don't exist. And some of these people in charge of these quote unquote diverse shows are so problematic. They're just so in like a simple sort of like, you're so like 2010 right now. Like you're just basically problematic. Like,
yeah.
To take quotes, you know, that's part of what I did in my show. I just put quotes for my emails on my, I had a, like a sort of funeral altar of like all my headshots and just like bad reviews and quotes and stuff from people. What was the question?
I don't remember. Question? Oh, audition spaces and like people putting assumptions on you.
Yeah, I mean, definitely assumptions. I feel like the assumptions that were the most frustrating to me, a part that I've kind of struggled with is the urchins in Little Shop of Horrors.
Mm-hmm.
I think in my dream world, I really want to be Audrey.
Mm.
But I have occasionally fooled myself into thinking that it would be good for me to go in for the urchins when they call.
I see.
And I have lived in several ghettos, like, in my life. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but, like, this is hilarious. You just don't get it. It's just not for you. Or Lemon Anderson, the poet, he came in and did a master class at the Bars Workshop with us one time. And he was talking about who has the right to review work of color.
Yeah.
And specifically talking about his show, he was like, you know, like you don't understand the nuance of this pimp.
Right.
And so it's just sort of like, you know, like you want me to play this signature, you know, who you think should tell these two white people's stories from the corner of the poverty. And I'm like, well, I think she would be a hilarious dyke who's like, whatever, this way, you know,
or yeah,
this way and this way. And honestly, I'm too retired to even talk about this topic. I feel myself starting to
I'm sorry
go back to resting, reclining.
Yeah, recline away, have a sip of water. Hydrate. I think yes, because that what you just said about Little Shop is interesting, of like, and this is a conversation that's happening, but like it's not just about having like brown bodies on stage, it's about having people like that are producers, that are on the creative team, that are having this type of vision of like, oh, let's see it from this perspective. Let's add a layer on it by making it a queer woman of color.
Yeah. It's always I want to say shellac, but I don't know if that's the right word. I broke a nail, so I'm just thinking about that. I think.
I'm so sorry.
Devastating. yeah, you know, I mean, I don't, am I mistaken, or there are no black owned Broadway houses, right?
Correct.
So
I know one black Broadway producer, or like a pair. They're a pair, yeah. But yeah.
I mean, I know incredible people in the industry, but you know, people are always talking about that with my show, The Loophole, and I'm like, you know, you can't make a show that's, you know, right now, until there's a black owned house. Like, there's not going to be an all black thing, you know, or something. Back to Lemon Anderson, he just really affected me that day. He was saying that it's not, that it's only actually the writers who can fix it for the actors. Because otherwise we're just pushing them into other narratives, mm-hmm. and it's about the narrative coming from one of us.
Yeah. But gosh, the theater owner thing's interesting to me too, because it's like, even like, it would be a victory to have it come from a black writer, a writer of color, or I guess I should just say a writer of a marginalized community even. But, like, it still has to be, like, approved mm-hmm. by white people, because they're the ones that are producing yeah. and owning the theaters.
And I feel like that's been sort of one of the main frustrations to me in this technological time period, where it's like so many other fields have been made equitable by the advent of the internet, whereas... to me, participating in the theater, I kind of sometimes feel like I'm in the one art field where I still have to, like, appease this person, because it's a finite geographical location that right. has the stamp of this right. level of the art form.
You're right. I want to make you happy again, so we're going to stop talking about woes of the industry.
I'm like, you see how I get.
I know. I'm sorry. No. Let's talk. What makes you happy? Can we talk? Let's talk about other things.
What makes me happy?
Yeah.
Retirement.
Get out of here. For real?
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? It's delicious.
But, okay. I can accept that truth. I don't know why I'm like, I just feel like, because I want you to continue creating, I guess, is why I'm having such a problem with this. But, like, you got, like, you do you, as they say.
As they say.
As you the kids you, say. Let's talk about bars, because that's how we met, and yes. that'll be fun. Because you've been in all the cohorts.
I've been involved in the last four cohorts.
Yeah.
Bars workshop at the Public Theater.
How many have there been?
There have been four at the Public Theater, and then there was the original workshop before it was picked up by the public.
Oh, okay, so you've been in all of the Public Theater cohorts.
Yes.
So for the listeners, can you break down how you would explain bars?
I think about this all the time. I would explain bars as like the Google Design Lab of theater,
yes,
verse, rap, and film. Like,
that's a great explanation.
Like, this play space where great minds come together and make something once a year and under a theme. And it's always so invigorating to me. I love it there.
See, you're happy when you do.
See,
right?
I'm happy. Yeah.
What remind me of some of the themes?
So, the first year that I was a cohort member, the theme was Great American Literature.
Uh-huh.
And the next year was photographs, and the next year was monuments, and the last year that we just did was folk tales and fairy tales.
Oh, very cool. I didn't know about that one. I believe the one that we met at was the American literature one.
Yeah.
Because that was the night before the 2016 election.
Was it?
Mm-hmm. Because I, after that, went to Glass House, drank either in sadness or happiness, I didn't know at the time, met Sarah Bareilles and Katie Lowes, and was like, wow, this has been a great night. Like, I saw some amazing art, and now this. And then the next day, Hillary Clinton was not elected. So it was like this is a beautiful night filled of joy and creation. What was that night like for you?
That night was crazy for me. I usually like to say that bars was my birthday, even though it's usually a little earlier, because I'm like, that was so fun. Like, there's no way I can have a party that's going to top that, and then I'll be, like, disappointed.
Yeah.
That night was fabulous. That year we, oh my God, we did the craziest thing ever. We filmed a, I want to say like 38, 35 minute, you know, continuous shot,
right,
in the round, live, movie, musical, verse, rap, medley. And it was just so exciting.
Yeah.
It was just so exciting. It, like, to Brené Brown, it felt very in the arena.
We love. Yes.
I love Brené Brown.
Shout out to Brené. She listens with Elton John. They have, like, yes, a listening party every week.
Oh, my God.
Week, so
hey, girl, out. I love you. Keep doing you.
And what is the process like before you actually filmed it? Like, the actual writing?
Woo. it's completely different every year. I mean, it's it's such a hybrid program. It's really about the artists that come into the space, and they are so drastically different, and they are already sort of outliers, you know, who practice. They're hybrid artists already.
Mm-hmm.
So you might have somebody who's got, you know, 3 rap albums,
right,
and is a painter and, you know, whatever. And then somebody who is an actress who writes songs, and then, so, you know, and then somebody who, you know, writes poems, lots of poets involved in bars.
Is there an application process? How do people
there
selected?
Is. There's an application process. It's a really fun application. it's, you know, I think it's like a single page form, and then you send a video.
Oh, yeah.
And there might be like a small prompt. Like, I think the video you make, like, there's usually like a 1 week application window.
Yeah.
And you just sort of barf something up, because that's sort of the way the process is. Like,
is it?
Like, yes.
You'd say it's like that?
Yes. Very like, okay, go write this thing and come back in 20 minutes and show us. Like,
wow.
And then, you know, oh, that's great. Now you do her piece, and then add a dance to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you can come over here and, like, mirror her. It's just, like, it's mayhem. It's great, though.
But it's very, like, I feel like it taps into exactly the disciplines that it's about. You know what I mean? Like, it's very yes and, like, in that sense. We love an improv moment.
It's very improv.
You know? But, like, not that I have any experience in, like, freestyle rapping or anything like that, but you have to be able to, like, think on your feet in those moments.
Yeah, you have to think on your feet. You don't have to, you know, be a freestyle star, although many of us are, but it's definitely, it's just about like creating, collaborating quickly. You know, some parts of it feel very directly like a writer's room.
Oh,
you know,
really?
Big around the table. Let's talk about this. Let's work it out.
Oh, wow.
Some parts of it feel like a dance movement workshop, like embodied storytelling sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then some parts of it just feel like some late night slam poetry moment. Cool. So,
and you have to be very vulnerable, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, because of the nature of it, I feel like everybody wears a bunch of different hats, mm-hmm, and odd hats, and therefore you're gonna sort of have to lean into one thing that you're maybe not used to. And
yeah.
So it's just about like leading with your strengths while being put in a position where, you know, maybe you're in something where 3 other people do this as their main art form and you're now doing it with them.
Yeah. Know? Did you have a moment like that where you were like, I have to lean in?
I mean, I've had so many moments over the last few years. It's just, it's been a huge, huge, I feel like I literally got free grad school.
Wow.
The last 4 years of this.
Wow.
I've been so blessed by this program. Like, literally life-changingly blessed. The second year, I was the alumni residency writer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to work with Jeannie O'Hare, I think once a week. So basically, like, incredible, incredible dramaturgy on my musical.
Mm-hmm.
And then that just kind of kept going for 2 years.
Because she liked this.
And then that led to the public producing the show in public studio this last year. And so that was incredible.
Yeah.
Got to write that and perform in it also.
Hey, yo. what, I guess specifically from the bars experience, not necessarily public studios, but from the bars experience, do you feel like you took away with you? Like, what was the biggest thing you learned?
I think I remembered what got me into this. Because to me, you know, the video we made, they're all on YouTube. You know, they're on YouTube.
Right.
And I did not grow up seeing Broadway shows or anything like that. And, like, essentially, if I want to reach, you know, sort of my younger self and heal myself, that, you know, I need something that can be rented from the library on VHS. Mm. That's the kind of art I need to make. And also just a sort of, I think, a camaraderie of these kinds of people. I think in the commercial theater space, like, you know, don't put that you have any directing credentials on your acting resume, and don't, you know, constantly hiding the fact that you're a hybrid artist and multi-hyphenate, trying to keep it like a dirty secret, you know, and to just be somewhere where everybody was like that. It was just like, oh, okay. Like, this is actually a major strength. I don't know why.
Yeah. Like, embrace it.
Yeah. Why it feels like, you know, a dirty thing or a corny thing sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, I do it all, you know?
Yeah. No, that's real. What would you say your, if you had to choose, if you could choose like a favorite out of those four, which would you
choose? I did a different like job each year.
Okay.
And so now for the last 2 years, I've just been a co-facilitator and I work primarily coaching the vocal direction. So like,
gotcha.
We're going into this is poetry, but now it's kind of rap. What if we heightened it to like a little sing-songy and we added some harmonies and, you know, and I get to, you know, do dramaturgy. It's a huge, like, it's literally a huge writer's room. So you get to do dramaturgical work. You get to do anything that needs to be done.
Yeah.
But I mean, the first year, that's how I met Jay Adana, who I wrote The Loophole with.
Right, right.
And we wrote a musical excerpt based on Beloved, Toni Morrison's Beloved.
Yeah.
And that led to several other opportunities. They featured it on PBS. And
listen,
so.
Listen, PBS.
Yeah, and honestly, like, you know, with Miss Morrison passing away, I'm like honestly still in shock that. Like, I saw an article, and I was in the article, and I was just like, are you kidding me? Like,
right.
This is honestly absurd. But, yeah, just so grateful to be a part of that, like, greatest legacy ever. Like,
yeah.
So
tell us about The Loophole.
The Loophole.
Mm-hmm.
The Loophole. The Loophole's fucking lit.
As it should be.
Oh, I have so many different descriptor versions of it in my head. It's an alternate history.
Okay.
It's got a lot of folk music and rap and verse and definitely has mystical elements and sci-fi elements. And it's set in the Civil War with a biracial black woman who is a scientist and a map maker. And she's also sort of like a princess in a tower. So she lives with her white father, and her mother died during childbirth. And basically, she has never left this house. And so she lives with the sort of freedom and agency of a white man her entire life inside this house.
Ooh.
And then she falls in love with a black man who wanders onto their property one day, Acker, and he wants to run because he's just freed himself from a plantation, and he wants to see the world, and he wants to, you know, he makes his own rules, and he doesn't care what people say. He's free, say he's whatever, and he wants her, and he wants to go explore. And she has incredible ideas for helping the world and liberating black people, but her father is terrified. And essentially, just to wrap up the prologue, because it's truly an epic, he gets arrested by slave catchers, and they end up murdering them. And so she blames him and says, you know, it's your fault. You should have followed the rules. This is why we don't go out there. And clearly, you don't understand the severity of the world out there. You can't protect me. And so he leaves and she stays, and that's the prologue, and then we skip a year.
That's the prologue?
That's the prologue, I know, right?
Y'all, producers, get on it.
Come through. But it's fun, and it's mystical, and it's, yeah, I love it.
So you said you met Jay through bars.
Yeah.
But then how did the idea, how did the inspiration come about for you guys to, like, work together?
So she had been working on this show for years in a very different form already. And we were assigned to work together. Essentially, we both chose Beloved as our top choice
to work on. Okay.
And so we were paired together. And a few months after the workshop, she reached out to me. And, you know, I was like, oh, we should, you know, add the Alligator Queen as, like, this super mystical character. And, you know, I'm never sure how much I should actually say. I'm like, I've never been in this position. So I'll just say really cool mystical elements.
Yeah. We'll keep it at that.
I add the magic. Yeah.
Hey. And so then... Whew, first of all, the fact that was just the prologue is, like, wild, exciting, but I'm just like, damn. So how did y'all go about piecing together this mystical epic, we will call it?
So, I mean, it's the version that, you know, I came in on was very different sort of genre. And it's just been years, honestly. It's just been years of...
Wow.
And we've been so incredibly blessed. I mean, we have the dumbest luck and alignment in the universe. I mean, by the time the show was being produced at the Public, I don't even think we even knew what that meant. Like, still, really? We're just like, I don't know, you know?
But what did they say? They're like, luck is, opportunity meets preparation.
Yes.
So, like, y'all
yes.
were ready.
Yes. No, yes. We are both...
You're a Virgo.
Very,
so.
Yes.
And so we know.
Yes.
But what was, I mean, so you're like, Public Studios, that's cool. Like, what was that experience like?
Honestly, it was crazy. And I feel like this chapter I'm in right now is sort of like the energetic shakeoff of that.
Mm.
Where, like, I had this really wild experience of of being Liddy Lin-Manuela, as I like to call it sometimes.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah.
And I mean, it was just I really still don't know what happened. It's been like 6 months now at this point.
Right.
It was fabulous to I mean, it's just so incredible to have so many people come together and they've all read your work and they all have ideas and they have photos and they have vision for it and they see it too, and this thing, you know, just gets bigger and wilder than it was when it was just you.
Yeah. It's kind of like actually podcast alum Larry Owen said this to me a long time ago.
Yes, I don't know him, but he's fabulous.
Yes,
I love that show.
Yes, A Strange Loop. Michael R. Jackson, another podcast alum. Just a name drop for you guys. But he said something to me once of sometimes we forget how to dream. And I feel like that right there is like, oh, it was like supporting your dream. And it's like, oh, you know what? Like, I can dream even bigger than I thought I could.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
So what's the next dream? Look, we're about to get in our feelings, y'all. Welcome.
The next dream... I have so many dreams. This is gonna sound so braggadocious.
I'm ready.
But I think I'm a visionary.
Okay.
I think I'm somebody who sees things, and I feel like the job of the visionary is to hold on to that vision no matter what other people say. Right?
Mm-hmm.
This is something I tell people when I have clients and they're frustrated. I always tell them, you know, and I remind myself all the time that it's nobody else's job to see the vision but you. That's what makes you the visionary. You've been given the vision.
Wow.
And your job is to hold that until it manifests, you know?
Yeah.
And so I just, you know, I have a million dreams. I'm a big, I'm waving my arm in the sky. lots of thoughts, lots of ideas. I'm like a super pitcher. I'm like, we could do this. We could do that. We could do this. What if we did that? What if we did that? You know?
Yeah.
And so right now I am just, completely retiring and moving, stepping back and sort of assessing which dreams are, which visions are there because they're so totally graspable, and which dreams are there because they are my deepest desire and what I want to make with my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I have this dream of doing nothing.
What a dream. What a dream. Especially for a Virgo. I'm like, wow, I'm proud of you. I'm proud. Okay. Yeah. No, that's true. I think you should claim that. Claim that visionary title. Recently retired musical storyteller and visionary. Zeniba now.
I usually, yeah.
You know? Well, and so you have your company, so I can never say it right, because I want to say like an Australian, and then I've...
You can do it, yeah.
Soy Fierce.
Soy Fierce.
Oh, that was like that. Wonderful. Oh, my God. I'm so impressed. What is the shape of that right now? Like, where does that lie in the dreamscape?
So when I first graduated from BoCo, I immediately was like, as I do all the time, I need to go back to film. I need to get back to my roots. I need to go to film.
Oh.
This is, you know. And I joined the independent film school run by Ella Thier, who's a fabulous New York City filmmaker and educator. And just began for years taking class there, all her master classes, till I became a lab fellow. And I became an independent filmmaker. And gotcha. That's how I ruined my life.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Great. Very cool. Yeah. So you're retiring from that too.
Yeah, you got to retire from everything.
Honestly. Just like across the board.
I mean, technically, if I just, you know, hung around and finished up my work, if I could just birth these things out of post-production.
Yeah.
I don't know who I would be.
You're going to find out soon enough though, huh?
Someday. <yeah. laughs>
No, I feel that. I feel that. I think it's important to take time for yourself. Sort out the dreams. If folks want to follow your journey and your dreams on social media, where would they find you?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question.
Mm-hmm.
That is a really great question. I'll say just type my name in, Zeniba Now, and Zeniba I will now. Come up under some handle or some form.
And your website's lit as... Oh,
thank
as you.
You.
Yeah, like, it's... I was enjoying it. So
I have fun with that. I definitely take it up and down all the time.
Keep it up.
Well, you know, it's like one of those, you know, like sometimes you're like, oh, it should just be like a placeholder, like I'm in a state of transition, it should just be simple. And sometimes I'm like, there's nowhere for me to express, let me put this here, and you know.
Yeah.
Like the emotional resume, you know.
Oh my God, thank you for bringing up the emotional resume. I almost forgot. I was about to wrap us up, but we cannot. Because we have to talk about you and Tanya Pinkins and worshiping at her feet, which is listed on Zeniba's emotional resume, y'all. Okay.
Yes. If I had my ish together, I would love to do a series of emotional resumes.
I love it. I think it's such a smart idea. Like, y'all, so y'all go to Zeniba's website, but it's literally like a resume, but it's not like, oh, I did the Drowsy Chaperone in college. It's like, I worshiped at Tanya Pinkins' feet at a party?
At a party, yeah.
So what happened? What's the story behind it?
Oh, it's great because I get to, like, you know, name drop another commission of mine.
Great. We love. We support.
I was commissioned to write and perform an excerpt of The Loophole for the 50th anniversary of Hair.
Oh, okay.
At the Public Theater.
Yeah.
So they had this, like, crazy gala event that was, like, we did all three theaters, like, rotating, and we, like, were in one of the theaters, and we performed three times. The audience would rotate. And then, like, we went out into the lobby, and, like, Gavin Creel, like, sang Hair. It was great.
And
they gave
it.
Us,
I
like,
love.
Tambourines. It was wild.
Yes.
And we were in the library, which is the bar / restaurant at the Public.
Mm-hmm.
And she was there, and I was just like, oh, my God. I was with my great friend Anthony Alvarado. I was like... yes, let's do it. And so we just thought it was cute to like go up to her and just worship at her feet because she deserves that.
What was her reaction?
She was, of course, like, you know, so thought it was cute and also like then wanted, you know, to be like humble and be like, what are you guys doing here? You know, what's going on? And talk to us. And we're like, just let us be peasants. Yeah.
Bask in your awesomeness.
Exactly. Yeah. And she looked fabulous. It was great.
That is very cool.
Yeah.
So when you were first starting out, like in theater at BOCO or even in California, did you feel like you had Black women role models to look up to in the theater?
No.
How did you discover Tanya Pinkins?
Everything I know about anybody is from like video things that they made, and they made a which show was it? I feel like there used to be this movie with George C. Wolfe in it that they showed us in high school, and it had like a bunch of like different things that were on Broadway, like Avenue Q and Wicked.
Oh,
and like,
you're talking about the Showbiz documentary.
I think I don't know what it was.
No, definitely.
But I think that's how I learned about her.
And it highlighted like the four. There were four shows at the Tony Awards. Yeah,
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, but yeah, no, I didn't. You know, I think I had one. I went to Urban Bush Women this last summer to their Summer Leadership Institute, which is incredible, life changing. You should do it. Okay. Everyone should do it. It's open to all races, genders, creeds, etc., who are agreeing to the theme, when Black women plus prevail, we all prevail.
Wow.
And one of the questions they asked us in one of the community building things was about, we all kind of went around and identified the percentage of Black educators we had in our life. Or like mentors in the field. And I think I had one Black educator in the theatrical field, I think, ever. And that was Ty Jimenez, the ballet dancer and Broadway star. And she worked at the Boston Conservatory and she taught me ballet.
Wow.
Yeah, I love her.
Did the prospect of there being few Black women scare you or make you feel some type of way?
I don't think I was aware of that.
Okay.
Yeah, I wasn't. I didn't understand what was happening until I was much older. I just didn't get it.
And I'm always curious talking to fellow biracial folks. How do you feel about being biracial? Like, do you ever feel a sense of duality? Or like, I do. I don't know if it's because I'm like super light skinned or what.
Oh no, I definitely feel all kinds of thoughts about it. It adds so much brain space to my thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember the first time. I remember doing the Loophole at that gala, and that was sort of its first big public presentation. And I remember thinking, and like, I don't usually get nervous before shows. It's just like in the middle of a show, suddenly I'm like, oh, I did have some nerves I was ignoring, you know?
Yeah.
Like, ooh, you know. But like, I'm not usually like nervous before shows, and I was so nervous before that show. And it was all because I felt like I was outing myself as biracial by telling this story. Whereas I felt like, you know, it's not something usually people know or ask me about unless I bring it up. And I just remember being like mortified by that. And definitely all kinds of shame and, you know, everything Brené Brown could possibly talk about.
Hey, we need you, Brené.
Around that. But the show has been very healing in that regard.
Therapeutic.
Yeah.
What do you think the sense of shame stems from?
I mean, whiteness and proximity to whiteness and the sort of separation within the Black community over, you know, who's Eidos this, who's, you know, Native, who's not really Native, who's, you know,
mm-hmm.
African, who's, you know, all this stuff. It's just so complex. I also think Urban Bushwoman helped me understand that a lot more and sort of find a framework to understand race. Because I think I was sort of like grasping constantly at evidence, different evidences, without having a sort of larger framework. And they work with the People's Institute for Survival and Beyond, which is anti-racism training.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so that was, that helped me understand race and sort of the absurdity of the concept of race and how it operates systemically and how it operates at the community level and how it operates interpersonally. And yes, I think it is, I think it's a very, I think it's a challenging incarnation.
Wow. That was a powerful phrase. A challenging incarnation. Damn. Whew. See, like, this is all this I'm saying. Like, yes, I support you as a friend retiring and, like, taking that time. But, like, to be clear, you have so much to offer, so that's why, like, I'm upset. Do you see what I'm saying?
I can only have something to offer if I have my vibe right. Otherwise, I'll just be another bitter person talking who knows what kind of incoherence.
No, that's fair. Yeah, I don't want you to, like, give too much, you know, of yourself and not have enough for yourself, because you gotta be a visionary. You gotta go out and make some visions.
God, I shouldn't have said that.
I love it. I love it.
I'm a visionary, everyone.
No, but I think it does take a certain, I don't know if personality or vibe or what, to be able to dream big, to have the vulnerability and the confidence to do that. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So. Anyway, hi, hello. We've been talking for over an hour.
We have? Oh, yes, my God.
So, which I love.
I got a lot of Libra in the chart. I'm a talker.
I love windy
air.
But also, like, Libras, like, love, like, intellectual.
Yes.
You know, discussion.
Yes.
Mentally stimulating. The last two questions I like to end the podcast on are as follows. One, if you could recommend a piece of Black art for our listeners to take in, what would it be?
Ooh. A piece of Black art for our listeners to take in. Is it genre specific?
Oh, no. It could be a musical album. It could be a book. It could be a piece of theater. It could be The Loophole. Be like, y'all.
Y'all need to take in this show I wrote, y'all. It's going to heal you up. No. I mean, I'll go theater since we're in this space. I saw A Strange Loop, and I just thought it was so good. I was screaming.
Yeah?
Yes. And three actors who've been involved with The Loophole were in it. And so love that their resume says Loop on it twice.
Yeah. yes.
And yeah, I just thought it was so fabulous.
Yeah.
Literally. I thought it was incredible.
Yeah,
Arnolfo, who did the set design at the Playwrights Horizons, where A Strange Loop just was.
Yeah,
I have never, like, the arc to that set design and the budget use and, like, the arc of the show, just, like, the way that it, that level that it went to at the end, I didn't need it, and I was so surprised by it.
Yeah?
And I was so, and it was so, the juxtaposition of the fervor of that moment with the content of what's being said was just incredible. I thought it was incredible, and I loved the whole cast. They were so well featured.
Yeah.
And the choreography was great. It was all great. Whoever did that show, you're all great.
Congratulations. Even the music, like, the cast album, too, now being out. But
I have to listen.
Yes, yes. So shout out to y'all. Second question. If you could give a shout out to a fellow Black artist, let's say theater maker, storyteller, who would it be?
Danielle Brooks.
Oh, you knew.
You were ready. Yeah.
Shout out to Danielle Brooks. What is she doing that you're vibing with?
She is a total boss. She is such an inspiration to me. I met her on vacation, and we ended up, you know, creating a little project together. And since then, I have just been watching her move, and I feel like if you're talking about success and power and equity and change in terms of Black theater, I'd put my money on her.
Okay. All right, you heard it
here
first.
She's a Virgo.
Well, then, enough said. You heard it here first. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. This is so cool.
Yeah?
My first gig out of retirement, you know? It's nice that people haven't forgotten me.
Oh, my God. You are too funny. Yeah, no. Just keeping your name in the headlines, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Retirement what? Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Until next time, y'all.